Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, February the 8th. And this hour, we will wonder if you think Governor Doyle or any future Wisconsin governor should have the partial veto power. The partial veto allows the Wisconsin governor to cross out digits and words to create new sentences and sometimes new dollar amounts when he or she is combing through a bill. 2 years ago, Governor Doyle used the partial veto to rewrite several sections of the state budget bill, and he ended up increasing spending on public schools by $400 million more than what the Republican-led legislature at the time had intended to do. A proposed constitutional amendment that would prohibit the governor from using the partial veto power to create new sentences was passed by the state assembly last week. But Senate leaders are saying that this bill will not be brought to a vote in the Senate in time for the question to be placed on the April ballot. We wonder this hour, why not? Is the partial veto power of the Wisconsin governor a good idea or a bad one? Do you want this constitutional amendment put on the ballot for your vote? What do you think of Democrats in the Senate saying this won't be voted on in time to be put on the ballot? We will talk about the power and the politics of the partial veto, what critics have dubbed the Frankenstein veto. And we welcome your questions and thoughts about this at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So do you think the Frankenstein veto is a good nickname for this power?
Well, you know, so much of modern-day politics and modern-day government is spin. And what's really sort of fascinating about the term is not only describing something, but it's, in a sense, forcing agreement with the solution. Because you can't walk down the street and say, hey, are you in favor of the Frankenstein veto? I mean, who says? Oh, yeah, I'm in favor of the Frankenstein veto. I love Frankenstein.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like the way there was the debate a couple of years ago about what was then called partial birth abortion. If somebody accepted the terminology partial birth abortion, even though doctors said that term really didn't exist in their practice, then in a sense one was already being tilted from the problem towards the solution, towards agreeing with what should be done about it. So it's sort of fun to say Frankenstein veto. Maybe we should call it Dracula veto.
Why not? The werewolf veto.
There you go. Now you're in business. Joy, you're going to make a great politician.
Oh, but, you know, I guess the image is you know, stitching up a monster or something, and there is a little bit of manipulating and stitching and creating that's going on if the governor uses this.
What I think is important to be able to have any kind of analytic conversation about this, neutral conversation as opposed to partisan conversation, is for all of our listeners to think to themselves, well, would I be in favor of this if there's a Democratic legislature and a Republican governor? Mm-hmm. And would I be in favor of this if there's a Republican legislature and a Democratic governor? Because so much of the rhetoric that we're hearing these days is really that sort of disgusting situational ethics of politics, where politicians put on and take off their opinions based on whatever partisan advantage or disadvantage might occur. What we really have to talk about is the so-called Frankenstein veto a good thing or a bad thing, whether it's a Democratic governor or a Republican governor.
How powerful is this partial veto power?
Well, based on a comparison of the language of the Wisconsin Constitution compared to the constitutions of the other 49 states, Wisconsin's governor enjoys a partial veto power that is about as large as can be and perhaps the largest in the nation. And if you'll permit me to be a typical professor, the partial veto power is only two sentences in the entire Constitution. And if you'd permit me just to read it so people would understand what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It says, appropriation bills may be approved in whole or in part by the governor, and the part approved shall become law. In approving an appropriation bill in part, the governor may not create a new word by rejecting individual letters in words of an enrolled bill. That's the entirety of the partial veto bill. And so all the debates have been about the word part. For example, if when Governor Thompson was governor, he ins- instituted a whole new practice of interpreting the word part. Up until then, for example, Governor Lucey, if he faced the number 22 million in a budget bill that was presented to him, and if he wanted to reduce that number, he would eliminate, let's say, three of the zeros. So instead of talking about 22 million, you were talking about 22,000 or 220,000. In other words, he retained the original number as it was printed. Governor Thompson engaged in a broader interpretation of the word part. So if he ended up with the word 22 million, he would say, well, the number 11 million is a part of the number 22 million, and I'm going to insert the word 11 million. And that went up to the state Supreme Court, as deservedly it should be, and the Supreme Court ruled that if we look at the language of the Constitution where it says be approved in whole or in part, well, the number 11 million is part of the number 22 million.
Wow. Yeah. Now, Mordecai, what about the so-called Vanna White veto? Wasn't there a ruling that the governor cannot just cross out an individual letter?
Indeed, that happened when I was in the state legislature, back when dinosaurs roamed the state street.
I remember it, so go ahead.
We're dating ourselves, Joy. And if you'll recall, I had read two sentences. The first sentence was the one about in whole or in part, limited to appropriations bills. Mm-hmm. The second sentence said, in approving an appropriation bill in part, the governor may not create a new word by rejecting individual letters in the words of the enrolled bill.
Mm-hmm.
So what that did is it prevented, for example, Governor Thompson from creating the word, let's say, may, by going through text, finding an M, and then going through some more text and finding an A, and so on. So the Vanna White veto constitutional amendment was the only limitation that's ever passed that's limited a governor's constitutional powers to engage in a partial veto, and so this so-called Frankenstein veto of stringing together words to create new sentences is, in a sense, the next step in considering whether there should be a limitation.
We're talking with Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee, about the flap over the partial veto power of Wisconsin's governors. We'll check weather, and then we'll welcome your questions about this. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 7 o'clock, I'm going to start a series with the candidates running for state Supreme Court in Wisconsin. We'll first talk with an analyst about what's at stake, the issues, the candidates, and then we'll welcome in our first candidate, Madison attorney Linda Clifford. Tomorrow, between 7 and 8, we'll hear from the other two candidates running for state Supreme Court. So you can be the judge coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about the so-called Frankenstein veto with Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. This is an issue because the state assembly last week approved a constitutional amendment, a proposed constitutional amendment that would take away the partial veto power of Wisconsin governors. That authority allows governors to cross out words to create new sentences. Governor Doyle used that power during the last budget, and he rewrote four sections of the state budget and ended up increasing spending on public schools by $400 million. Governor Doyle asked Democrats who control the state Senate to reject this attempt to limit his veto power, and some key Democrats this week said they would not bring that resolution, that proposed constitutional amendment, to a vote. So therefore, it's not going to be appearing on the April 3rd ballot. We wonder whether it should. We wonder whether you think the governor of Wisconsin, whether it's Governor Doyle or anyone else, should have this partial veto power or not. Is this a good idea to allow a governor to essentially rewrite a budget bill? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions on this for our guest. And what about Governor Doyle said, Mordecai? Where he told Democrats that this is important, that he have this veto power in order to protect schools, is what I'm reading here, that he thinks that this is important for him to have during this budget cycle so he can protect priorities of Wisconsin.
Of partisan politics is based on the theme of where you stand depends on where you sit.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if a Democrat is sitting in the governor's seat versus a Republican, if the Democrats are the majority party in one of the legislative houses or not, that there's sort of this built-in, I disagree with you and you disagree with me, and I'm looking for an advantage over you and you're looking for an advantage over me. And I think that to a certain extent, that's one of the reasons why Americans just hate politicians, because politicians aren't consistent. Depending on who's president or who's governor, they take certain positions, and then the morning after an election, if there's a change, they change their position. I think we should ask ourselves, is a second limitation on a governor's partial veto power by preventing him or her from being able to string together words a good idea or a bad idea? Because, first of all, we have to clarify to the listeners that there's no effort to end the constitutional privilege that a Wisconsin governor has for partial vetoes. The intention here is to curb it in the same way that the Vanna White vetoes were curbed in that second sentence that I read a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's perfectly understandable that a governor, in this case a Democratic governor, would not want that limitation, as Tommy Thompson similarly did not want any limitations whatsoever on his right to engage in partial vetoes.
Yeah, talk about how this would curb the power as opposed to eliminate it.
Well, we have to sort of try to think of a bunch of words. You know, if you're looking at the page of text on a book you're reading, or you're looking at the page of text of a newspaper you're reading, that the practice called the so-called Frankenstein veto is that a governor is going through the text and finds the word the state, and then it's followed by a whole sentence, the state shall prohibit the activities. And so the governor retains the state and eliminates all the rest of the sentence, and then he or she keeps going through the text until he or she finds another word they want, the state shall, and then the state shall spend, and then the state shall spend $500 million on school aids or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be going through a dozen of pages of text of this budget bill. We have to remember a budget bill is about 1,000 pages long. And so the sort of hit-or-miss proposition is to string together words until you put together the sentence that you want. And in the meantime, what you're doing is you're partial vetoing out all of the other text, all of the other provisions. And as I recall, when one of the challenges to an aggressive exercise of the governor's partial veto power went up to the state Supreme Court, then Justice Bablich, who's now retired from the court, showed in his dissenting opinion that in that budget bill, a governor could have created the death penalty. In other words, out of thin air, just by skimming through the text and selecting words, could have created a sentence that said something like, the state of Wisconsin shall have the death penalty. And, of course, it wasn't in the bill, because that would be such a controversial issue, we would have known about it. And he was saying, well, if a governor could use his power to create the death penalty, is that a correct interpretation of constitutional limitations? And I think that that example is on everybody's minds, not just the example that you read about creating a new section to spend money on school aids, whether that's appropriate exercise of a partial veto power.
Yeah. The governor, it is hard to talk about this on the radio without actually seeing how he crossed out different words and sentences. But he, in the last state budget, he sifted through more than 800 words and figures spanning over two pages of a section of the budget. And he crossed out most of the language, leaving behind a single sentence authorizing $330 million in spending that was never approved by lawmakers. And there's the rub, too, that this becomes, he was increasing spending in a state budget bill, doing something that the legislature did not want him to do.
That's right. And what's important is that there can be two ways to try to curb the problem. See, there has to be an agreement about if there's a problem and what the problem is. And one solution to the problem, if one says it's a problem, would be to say, to focus much more on what you just focused on, Joy, to say the governor's partial veto power may not be used to increase an appropriations or to create a new appropriations. Rather, instead, what they're doing here is they're taking a different approach, and they're saying a governor may not string together words to create a new law. That's a slightly different curve. What I think is important is really to try to step back and think about, well, what's the public policy reason for having a partial veto? And similarly, what might be a public policy reason, not a partisan reason, for curbing the partial veto? And I think this really goes back to the effort by the Founding Fathers to create balance between an executive and a legislature. American political culture is very much influenced by the War of Independence and the Declaration of Independence, where we felt that the government was tyrannical, King George was tyrannical and needed to be limited. And also there was the feeling that by having different branches of government compete for power, there is a way to check and balance each other. So I think it makes sense that a governor and even a president should have a partial veto power to cut spending. Because it's relatively easy to imagine a runaway legislature saying, well, let's fund this and let's fund that and let's build a new bridge here and let's build a new bridge there. Let's make everybody happy. Let's put together 50 votes in the assembly to pass a budget. In other words, there's a kind of an inherent pressure for parochial spending, whereas a governor is a statewide elected official, has the state's entire perspective in mind, and might say, no, I can see why a legislator from Kenosha thinks this is a good idea, but I don't think so from the perspective of the state. I'm just going to partial veto out that section.
Mordecai, let me get a caller in from Madison. Jerry, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, great discussion. I'm in the car, so I apologize. I think the behavior of the legislature is really important, and if we want the best out of the legislature, we really should be asking them for more representative function. And by partial veto, what we're saying is that the representatives do not have the ability to craft good public policy as a statewide body. And let's take school reform, for instance, or school funding reform, which is a very good idea for Joel to move on that. So this is particularly sensitive for school reform. But let's say we want the legislature to come together to come up with a more comprehensive strategy for school funding. With the existence of the partial veto, it makes that much harder.
Yeah, we only have a minute before news time, Mordecai.
Instead, then let me just focus on one issue of timing, and that's that when the state Senate is apparently declining to act on the constitutional amendment to put it on the April ballot, that still gives them the option to pass it any time between now and putting it on the next November ballot.
We're talking with Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. He's talking with us about the power and the politics of the partial veto power of Wisconsin governors. In the news, because the state assembly last week passed a proposed constitutional amendment that would curb that partial veto power, but Senate Democrats, at the urging of Governor Doyle, have said they will not take this up during this budget session, so delaying any action on this. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 6:36 now on this Thursday, February the 8th, and we continue talking about the so-called Frankenstein veto, the nickname that some have given the partial veto power enjoyed by Wisconsin governors. Last week, the State Assembly approved a proposed constitutional amendment that would limit the partial veto power of Governor Doyle and his successors. The authority allows the governor to cross out words and digits to create new sentences. 2 years ago, Governor Doyle used the partial veto to rewrite four subsections of the state budget, and he increased spending on public schools by $400 million. Governor Doyle asked Senate Democrats this week to reject the attempt to limit his veto power, and key senators said that there will not be a vote on the resolution in time to put the question to voters on the April ballot. We're talking about the power and the politics of the partial veto, and welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We wonder if you think that this partial veto power of the Wisconsin governor is a good idea or not, whether or not you want a constitutional amendment put on the ballot so you can vote on this. We welcome your thoughts and questions. Our guest, Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And Mordecai, we got an email from Michael who says, I have never heard of such a strange veto power in another state, and it seems to me that the executive has far too much power. Can you perhaps explain something of the history behind giving the Wisconsin governor such a veto?
Yes, I can. The thinking that went into the original partial veto concept was that legislatures were spending machines. If you think about the way nowadays we criticize Congress, we criticize Congress because of all their earmarks, because the senator from Alaska was able to earmark $250 million for a so-called bridge to nowhere. Mm-hmm. And that, in fact, there is a modern-day push to say that presidents ought to have a partial veto power. Presidents ought to be able to eliminate from spending bills pork and waste and earmarked projects that don't have any national significance, because only the governor would have the president would have a national perspective instead of a parochial district perspective. And so the same logic applies to the chief executive of state government, that we would want a governor to be able to rein in the spending of an irresponsible legislature, to not spend as much, to be more responsible about spending powers. And that's why I think this so-called Frankenstein veto has really caught attention for two reasons. First, because of the substance of it, that Governor Doyle 2 years ago in the budget was able to create a new section of the budget bill by stringing together words from two pages of text that created a new section to spend more money. And so if the focus were on that, then mm-hmm. perhaps there'd need to be a constitutional amendment that says partial vetoes may not be used to spend more money than allocated by the legislature. The other one is whether, just in general, we think that a partial veto power should be able to string together words to create sentences.
Yeah, I recall President Clinton asking, wasn't he always asking for the partial veto power?
Indeed. Mm. And for a while he was given what was called a legislative veto power. In other words, that he could select out elements of spending and say, I think this part should be vetoed if the Congress does not override my veto. In other words, it was a kind of a reverse veto. But then there was a state Supreme Court saying that the whole legislative veto approach was not constitutional, so that had to go out. And yes, indeed, both Democratic and Republican candidates for president nowadays generally say that they think a president should have a partial veto power.
Yeah. And along the lines of the history, this has, we talked a little bit about it in the first half hour, but this has been a sore point between legislatures and the governor in Wisconsin in the past, especially
right.
with Tommy Thompson.
Right. I think Michael is right in hinting that it's only a modern-day controversy, that it was Governor Lucey, who was governor between 1971 and 1977, who really became an aggressive user of the interpretation of the word part. And he was the one who started doing very unusual things to exercise his partial veto power. And then, indeed, Governor Thompson took it even farther than that. And so it's been in a reaction to both Lucey and Thompson that first came the ban on Vanna White vetoes, and now the issue of whether there ought to be a ban on stitching together whole new sentences.
Yeah. The author, or one of the sponsors of this proposed constitutional amendment, Sheila Harsdorf, I can't find her quote, but what she was saying was that, like you said, it's not limiting, it's not banning the partial veto power. It says here, even with the change, Wisconsin's governor would still have the broadest veto authority of any other governor in the nation. Senator Sheila Harsdorf, though, said that governors could still write in lower spending amounts and they would still retain partial veto authority. But she says no governor should be able to write laws that have not been passed by the legislature.
That's right, and I might as well sort of show my card facing down and say that on public policy reasons, I think this is probably a pretty good idea. Mm-hmm. That we would want a governor to be able to curb spending by a runaway legislature or an irresponsible legislature. But the question is, if the public policy intent of the partial veto is to reduce spending, then maybe it's reasonable for us to say, well, wait a minute, you can't create a whole new law, you can't create a whole new section, and you certainly can't create new spending. And so it seems to me that without being partisan, would this be a pretty fair principle to apply to both Republican and Democratic governors? I think probably so.
Let's take another call. Jake in Madison. Hi, Jake.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if you could make a comparison between this kind of power and the signing statements power that the president has been taking advantage of. I'll take my comments off the air.
That's a wonderful comparison, because what happens, this is a practice that some presidents have exercised before, but the current president, George W. Bush, has been using in a much greater volume, where upon signing a law, he might have a very long legal statement saying, for this section, I'm interpreting the law as meaning only this and not this, and for this section, I think it means this and not this. In other words, he's sort of curbing the operational impact of the law, and there have been arguments whether that's constitutional, because it's sort of like him creating for himself a partial veto power. And I really hope that a good test case would go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I suspect that the Supreme Court would probably curb that kind of activity.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Jake. Patrick in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. It just occurs to me that if the governor can take out so much text, I think you said he edited something like 800 words down to a single sentence, what happens to all that stuff in the middle? You know, is that just lost? You know, was it not important? Or I would like to get your comments on that. And also, I would just like to suggest that maybe, you know, restricting the governor to just something more along the lines of a line item veto, or allowing him to exercise his power in some kind of in the context of a budget summary where there just where there weren't as many words for him to play with, maybe that would at least appear to be more responsible.
Right, Patrick. In answer to the first half of your question, indeed, the text that he vetoed out to create the sentence about spending for school aids, all that text was lost. Lost in the sense of that it did not become law. It was in the version of the bill, what we say the enrolled bill, that was submitted to the governor, and by exercising his partial veto power, those words did not become law, unless his partial veto had been overridden by the legislature, and then it would have restored that original language. With the second half of your question, you talked about a summary of a law. Indeed, for those of the listeners who are familiar with looking at laws that are being bills that are being considered by the state legislature, the Legislative Reference Bureau, the LRB, creates what we call a plain language summary of the bill at the beginning of the bill. But that really has no legislative legal standing. In other words, there's no official summary of the state budget bill. It's a bill. It's language that's being presented to the governor. And so it's an interesting idea that you suggest, but there really is no summary. We really have to deal with the text of the enrolled bill that's presented to the governor.
Our guest is Mordecai Lee. He's a former state lawmaker and now a professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, talking with us about the flap going on in the state capitol over the governor's partial veto power. The state assembly passed a resolution last week that would place a proposed constitutional amendment on the ballot that would limit the governor's partial veto power. But the state Senate is saying it's not going to take action on this in time to put it on the ballot in April. We're wondering what you think about this, whether you think the Wisconsin governor should be able to have this powerful partial veto power. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 7 o'clock. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 7, I'll talk with a guest about the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. And after 7:30, we'll hear from one of the candidates running for State Supreme Court. Madison attorney Linda Clifford will be My guest after 7:30 tomorrow between 7 and 8, we'll hear from the other two candidates who will be running for state Supreme Court. There's a primary on February 20th, and you have to vote for one of these three and narrow the field so two will advance for the April election. So meet the candidates and decide who you want to vote for. Coming up, starting after 7 o'clock. We're talking about the effort to try to limit Governor Doyle's or any Wisconsin governor's partial veto power, and welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Key Senate lawmakers said Tuesday, according to the State Journal, that the Senate won't vote on a resolution asking voters in April to amend the Wisconsin Constitution to curtail the partial veto ability of Governor Jim Doyle and his successors. Opponents of the Wisconsin governor's ability to use this veto pen to carve up legislation and create new law have dubbed it the Frankenstein veto. It is not going to be on the ballot this April, according to State Senator Fred Risser, a Democrat of Madison. Risser chairs the Senate Ethics Reform and Governmental Operations Committee. He says his panel will take up the resolution, including possibly amending it to take effect in 2011 after Doyle completes his second term. But Democrats or the Senate won't vote on the bill before February 20th, which is what's needed to put it on the April 3rd ballot. What about this? Let's do this after Governor Doyle is out of office, Mordecai.
Well, that's one way to try to departisanize it. In other words, to say, we don't know if Governor Doyle will run for re-election after 4 years from now, or if he doesn't run for re-election, we don't know if a Democrat or Republican will be affected. But can we compromise that we all agree that as a matter of principle, not knowing the partisanship of that next governor, that that governor ought not be able to do it? That's a relatively typical form of a political compromise. Another political compromise might be that, indeed, they're not going to act on it between now to get it in time on the ballot for April. But we have to remember that a legislature can control when it acts on things. And so, for example, last November when we voted, there was the constitutional amendment on banning gay marriage. The Republican legislature had controlled the timing so it would be on the November ballot rather than the preceding April ballot. So there's a possibility that it could end up on the November 2008 ballot, and then it would only affect the last 2 years of Governor Doyle's term, assuming it did not have the kind of amendment about delayed if effect that Senator Risser was talking about.
Yeah. Senate Majority Leader Judy Robson, Democrat Beloit, says, it's my view that if we do this, we ought not change the rules in the middle of a governor's term. The governor's had this power for 70 years. I don't think there's a rush.
Well, now we're trying to look for substance inside of partisanship. Mm-hmm. And instead, I think it's fair to understand that life is about teams. And in Wisconsin politics in Madison, there's the Democratic team and the Republican team. And so you've got a Democratic governor who says, I don't want you guys to curb my veto control power. Look, I was able to use it to increase school spending. And it's understandable that the Democratic majority leader of the Senate would say, hey, I'm going to support my Democratic governor.
Take some more calls. John in Mequon. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm wondering, is Governor Dole doing that much more than Tommy Thompson did, that this has become an issue, or is it just politics that's causing this to happen?
Oh, gosh. I think I'll take a pass on interpreting the first half of your question. But I think what really struck a nerve was the example that Joy has been citing from the newspaper, where he strung together words not to limit spending but to increase spending. And so in that respect, they're making an argument that it's a reasonable limitation on a partial veto power to prevent increased spending. But on the other hand, the actual proposal does not say a partial veto power may not be used to increase spending. It simply says a partial veto power may not be used to create a new sentence. So in other words, even if this proposal were to be enacted into constitutional language, if within a sentence, the same sentence, a governor were to be able to just delete individual words, that might well have the effect of increasing spending. So the question here is if we're correctly jiving the problem with the solution.
Let me just, grab an example out of today's news, which will be a part of the budget process. The governor announces his budget on next Tuesday, And he did announce yesterday that he wants to invest in Milwaukee, the state's largest city, some $80 million, wants to include more than $15 million for Milwaukee schools, $35.5 million for reducing crime in Milwaukee, $21 million for property tax relief. Now, he gives this in a budget proposal to the state legislature. Maybe the state legislature doesn't want to do exactly what the governor wants to do. And maybe it's going to propose less money for Milwaukee. If the governor has this partial veto power and uses it like he's used it in the past, he could cross out words and just restore what he wanted to do, even if that's not what the legislature sent him.
Right. Of course, the governor is bound by the language, the actual text that's presented to him or to her. But there are very creative ways where you might go through a couple dozen pages of text, eliminate whole sentences, whole paragraphs, until you can string together a sentence. And that's indeed what the so-called Frankenstein veto proposal would ban.
Thanks to John. Dave and Sharon. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. My question was, I believe that we can cut out pork by doing a line item veto type thing. I don't know that I agree with text by text. I thought, well, why don't we just present the bills as single subject bills and then veto each individual or pass as the subject content is, and then they don't have multiple subject bills.
Right. What it comes down to is that every time a bill is presented to a governor that engages in any spending, that's then defined as an appropriations bill, and then under the interpretation of the language of the partial veto power, anything in the bill, not just the numbers, but the text itself, can then be affected by a partial veto. Theoretically, I suppose one could send itty-bitty bills to a governor that would really make it impossible to exercise the power other than reducing numbers. But then you get to the practical issue that a state budget bill, because it encompasses all state spending and taxing for a two-year period, is about 1,000 pages. One would be presenting to a governor perhaps 5,000 bills. That's a lot of bills.
Thank you, Dave, for the call. Next is Rose in Arborvitae. Hi, Rose.
Hi. My question is, what was eliminated in those two pages that Governor Doyle eliminated?
You know, we didn't really talk about this. It seems to me, Mordecai, that when he was crossing out those words and digits and connecting the various sections, that that's how he transferred some $400 million from the transportation fund into the education fund, or into the, for local schools.
Right, and I believe that some of the major sponsors of the constitutional amendment, the Republicans in the state assembly and state senate, I believe have put on their websites that particular example that Rose is asking about. And I don't have the text before me, and so I'd encourage Rose to do a quick internet search, and she'll very easily find that text, and she'll be able to see what proposed laws were actually eliminated or prevented from going into effect in order to create that new sense to increase spending on school aid.
Yeah. And as you say, Mordecai, this shouldn't necessarily be a partisan issue, but it's turned into one to some extent, has it not?
I think it's 101% a partisan extent, and that's sort of what's sad about modern-day American politics. We're either 101% blue or 101% red. And I would merely encourage all the listeners to try to make up their minds based on the substance of the definition of the problem and the substance of this particular proposed alternative. Would they be in favor of it or against it, irrespective of the partisan affiliation of the legislature and the governor?
Yeah, you expect with your experience with these bodies that we might see this proposed constitutional amendment on the ballot later after this budget cycle, after Governor Doyle's second term?
I'll tell you what it has to do with joy. If Senator Risser's amendment that says it won't take effect until, 2011, if that is deemed as a change in the proposal, then the constitutional amendment goes back to square one. In other words, instead of being on second reading right now, after all, a constitutional amendment has to pass two legislatures, if that really turns back the clock and they have to start all over again, then it delays getting it on the ballot that's much farther. It would have to then bump into the next 2009-2010 legislature.
We'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, also a former state representative and state senator representing the Milwaukee area. We thank him for being our guest. We thank you for joining in, and we thank Karen Prager for producing the hour. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. Or you can listen to them online. We archive them all on our website, wpr.org, wpr.org. A reminder that on Tuesday, February 13th, Governor Jim Doyle will deliver his state budget address and present to the legislature his next proposed state budget. We'll carry that address live on the Ideas Network at 7 o'clock. It's a 7 p.m. address. Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg will be co-anchoring the coverage. And then on Wednesday the 14th, we'll get a lot of reaction to the state budget coming up next week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.